She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Happy New Year. Just remember, our tagline is we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to, and we're going to be bringing lots of things for you to think about. This 2012, I cannot believe it's a new year, and we are very excited about the first show of this new year. We have two great guests. First up is going to be Andrew Wolf, who's an exercise physiologist from one of the places that I truly heart on the planet, which is Miraval, Living Life in Balance. And our featured guest is Allison Cook, Director of Special Projects for The Story of Stuff. And if you have not visited The Story of Stuff's website and taken time out of your busy lives to take a look at it, it is life-changing. I've watched the video many, many times. It reminds me about living consciously, so that's all good. And also wanted to do a little shout-out to remind you that this show is indeed sponsored by the Fairfax Companies, and they are involved with the city and the county in a huge, massive Christmas tree recycling effort, and it's all stuff. It's so everything we talk about is apropos of The Story of Stuff. So just remember, don't throw your Christmas trees in the landfill. They can be recycled, and there's a project, and you can email Gina at Mrs. Green's World if you want to know where. They're on the Pima County government websites, and you can always call the Fairfax Companies to find out about their program. And they turn them into wood chips and use the green part for green composting. So it's a win-win-win. And today, I'm really excited about the show. It's a little bit bittersweet because a year ago today, I was at the Habs store, and it's the day that Gabby Giffords and many other people were shot in the tragedy of January 8th. So sorry for the little emotion in my voice. Clearly, if you listen to me on a regular basis, you know I am not a robot. I speak from my green heart. I was doing a live show at Habitat for Humanities with Terry D, and I am very grateful for Terry's friendship and his support. We were literally holding each other up because we both love Gabby. That's the only news that we knew at the time. And of course, there was much worse news to follow with the deaths of some really special people. And it's a tragedy all around. So tomorrow, I know that there are memorial services being planned all over the country, especially in Tucson. And they're going to be, what I do for almost everything is I Google it, but there's one called Reflections that's honoring the lives of the January 8th victims. It's the at 3:00 at the U of A Centennial Hall. I was speaking to Ron Barber, who works for Gabby, and he was one of the people that did get shot. And he said, Gina, come to this one. I think they're all going to be wonderful. There are two websites, www.beyondtucson.org. and www.rememberingjanuary8th.org. So I ask you, do whatever feels right for you. There's one thing that we're asking people to do around the country because the shootings actually occurred at 10:11, and they're trying to get everyone in the country to ring a bell at that time, regardless of your time zone. So it's a really good way to remember and pray and keep things in the consciousness about moving forward and healing and what we have done great things as a country to heal from this and, in fact, make some very good things come about as a result of it. So that's really my honor to everyone and to the victims and to the survivors. And let's us all just say a prayer, even if what you do is a personal moment of silence or gather some friends to do some prayer. So my thoughts and prayers, and everybody in the Mrs. Green team is very conscious of this. So let's not forget, let's remember and do something good about it. Please don't forget to connect with me on Facebook and Twitter, because that helps keep the good green word being spread about things just like this and about the story of stuff and about Miraval. There are a lot of wonderful things that are going on. So the thing that happens with me, which cracks me up, is Andrew has not called yet, but he will. I just spoke to someone at his home, and it's reflective of the world in which we live. He has no landline at his home, and we get a better, much better reception if there is a landline. So I called his cell phone, and he was going to a neighbor's to get on the landline. And let's just keep our fingers crossed, because I love having Andrew Wolf on the show, love having Miraval on the show. And I'll just give you a little bit of background about him, because it's really important, and I don't get a chance to do this a lot. So Andrew has a master's degree from the Human Performance Lab at UT Austin, and he specializes in exercise performance enhancement, as well as diabetes treatment and prevention through enhanced metabolic function. And I don't think sometimes people, like, you know, we roll our eyes about exercise. I'm one of those that has to do it. I'm doing something now called the 30-day shred that my friend Susan gave me, and this is what I know about exercise. The more you do it, the better you feel. And that sounds dumb, not just as a weight reduction or toning effort, but it is a mind, body, spirit thing. So he offers several classes at Miraval, Making Weight Loss a Reality, a transformational offering that helps strip away much of the fitness industry hype surrounding weight loss. And I just love that. And I also love that the phone is ringing. So I know Andrew is on the line, and I've got great questions for him. And he can absolutely articulate his mission more than I can, and things always work. So you got a good background about Andrew. You know, if you're part of my world at all, how much I care about what Miraval is doing. And he's going to talk about metabolism and prevention, making weight loss a reality, and how we can just get in better shape for a healthier, happier new year. So what's the scoop, Mr. Green? Is he on the line? He's going to call back on the landline in just a minute. So we got that. So he's going to talk about metabolism and prevention. That's one of the classes he does, making weight loss a reality, and optimal fitness diagnosis. These are some of the things he does at Miraval. And what I love about the show is that you get a chance to hear about all of these experts and all of their expertise by listening to Mrs. Green's World. And that makes me really happy, because Miraval, they're just great partners. And we'll start with the discussion as soon as he calls in. And then if you just tuned in, we're going to have Allison Cook, who's the Director of Special Projects at the Story of Stuff. And I'm so excited that I can't even believe it. So here we go with Andrew. Mr. Green is putting him on hold, and it is a perfect world. It all works out here at Mrs. Green's World. So we're going to talk about Andrew and his goals. Andrew, are you there? Hello?
Hello, how are you?
Andrew, Happy New Year. I'm so glad to hear your voice.
Oh, it's so good to hear your voice. I'm just sad that I'm not sitting next to you like last time.
I know. It was quite a day. So that will have to happen, and we can do a whole show. I was reading some of your background to the listeners and talking about it, and, you know, peppering it with Mrs. Green comments. So I got to give you a really nice long introduction about your expertise and what you bring to Miraval, and thereby, because you're on the show, all of Mrs. Green's listeners who haven't had the joy of experiencing Miraval yet.
Nice,
really nice. So talk about, you know, I know there are so many things, and I what I said before you got on is that I, in exercising, when I do it regularly, which I've, of course, probably 400 billion people committed to it on January 1st, I'm going to get back on the regular exercise program. I've got a partner, and we're holding each other accountable. We're just doing it in 30-day increments. So I decided I need someone to, like, kick me if I don't do it. So why don't we talk a little bit about how important it is for not just your physical health, but I love the message of mind, body, spirit. I mean, it does help prevent diabetes. It does help with headaches. It does help with stress reduction. Reduction, not dunction. So tell us a little bit about, I know you teach a bunch of really cool classes out there, but why don't we start with, what does a session with you look like? And what are you trying to determine when you meet with somebody?
Well, what I'm trying to really get an idea of is, first of all, who the heck it is I'm dealing with.
That's good.
You know, because when I get people who walk through the door and they're in my office because they've done a million triathlons and they want to go a little bit faster.
That would not be me.
And then I get people who have lived their entire life in a book and are brilliant, brilliant mentally, but pretty remedial when it comes to their physicality.
Right.
And I get everything in between. So largely, I spend the first like 10, 15 minutes just trying to get an idea of how people live their lives, you know, what their job is like, how long is their commute.
Getting to know you, yes.
Getting to know you. And then what I generally do is I really, if I can, I like to get a body composition on someone. That way, we're talking about realistic things. We're not talking about, you know, what you weighed in high school or what you weighed before you had three kids.
And as my mother would say, ay, 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 when I have a body composition, I tell people, could you please tell me what it was in now and then in 3 months? And I'll work on it. Okay, so go ahead.
Well, and the news is generally better than what people think it is going to be. But we tend to stand in the mirror and look at ourselves and curse our love handles and curse our butt cheeks.
The muffin top.
Muffin top, exactly. But in reality, most of my clients have a little bit more muscle than they thought they did.
Right.
And the news is not as bad as they think it's going to be. And, you know, quite frankly, from the body composition, something that really causes people a lot of mental anguish, the end result is usually they come out of it with a goal that seems much more plausible.
Right. Oh, gosh, that's so important. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, plausible, exactly. Then I, after the questionnaire, I take a blood pressure just to make sure everything's okay. And if everything's fine, I will go ahead with what we call a submaximal treadmill or a bike test. And I'm doing this while I collect heart rate. And there's a very simple reason. As an exercise physiologist, I'm not going to go home with these people and live with them.
Right, which in some cases, of course, we wish you were. Because then we would really be in shape.
I've had people say that to me.
Sure.
You know, if I know what heart rates are appropriate for a person, I can send them home, not with vague instructions, but I can say, look, when you're exercising, these are the heart rates I want you to hit because these, A, are doable for you, and B, they're enough to make a difference without blowing you out of the water.
Okay,
And that's one of the big things that's key when you're starting an exercise program, is to really start as underwhelmingly as is humanly possible.
So I want to ask you this and just absolutely let her rip, tell the truth. My plan, when my friend talked to me about it, here's what I love. Because I was really doing great spinning, and then my class I go to is 6 a.m. It got dark, and you would have think that I got like put in prison because it's dark. I can't go now. It's too cold. It's too dark. So the plan that I have, it's an at-home plan, and it's 20 minutes a day. And when she told me that, it really appealed to me because I said to myself, how can I not do something for 20 minutes a day? Is that part of what people should look at in you know, it's got to fit in with my lifestyle. So what do you tell people that want to really stick to a plan?
Well, I don't know if you've ever heard this term. We use it in the sciences a lot. It's called titration.
Never heard of it, but I love to learn new things.
Okay, good. Well, okay, let's say you've got a bowl full of a fluid, and you've got this other fluid that you're going to put into it. And when you put enough in, the bowl full of fluid will turn blue, let's say.
Okay.
Titration is the idea of just adding a little bit and adding a little bit more and adding a little bit more until it turns blue. That is how I like people to treat exercise. The idea that you would say to yourself, look, in week one of my exercise program, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try to do 50 minutes of exercise this week.
Okay.
I'm not going to get caught up on the idea that it's got to be 30 minutes or it's not worth it or something silly like that. But I'm just going to try to get 50 minutes of exercise in this week. And if I can pull that off, why don't we try for 60 minutes next week and 70 minutes the week after that? And the idea of starting doing something that you would normally think is too lightweight for you And then if it works out and you have the motivation adding more later, I love that idea.
And you start building your strength and not get so discouraged. That's speaking exactly. from personal experience.
Well, and, you know, it's the idea, you know, that I've been telling my clients about this talk I heard on TED.com, and it's about quantifying yourself. And these people basically keep giant records of everything they do. You know, how much they exercise, how many drinks they have, and, you know, how much they've eaten. And it's this interesting group of computer people. And they asked the guy who started the movement if there's any one lesson he learned about himself. And he said, well, what I've learned is the bigger the change I try to make, the worse it turns out.
Unbelievably interesting. I get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it. Like, I'm not going to become a vegan tomorrow. I'm having a meatless Monday. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm just
exactly.
not. I'm a carnivore, and you don't flip a switch and start eating kale. So I'm doing it gradually. Meatless Monday.
Exactly.
It's one step, and it's working. Okay.
Yeah. As my friend Jerry Humphreys once said, Andrew, there ain't nothing to it but to do it.
I love that. I should put that up on Facebook. Now, what happens also, I think, to people, and it's funny, Andrew, because I hit the magic 60 last year, and for the first time in my life, things, every little tiny ache pain, I press pause and say, I don't have chronic health problems. I don't want them. I better pay attention. So when I exercise, things don't hurt. And if I'm laying around, things start to hurt. What
Absolutely.
Is the most effective thing? Is there a best thing that we can do? Because to me, it's at 61 years old, being married 36 years, I'm not looking for the size 3 bikini when we go to Hawaii.
Right.
I never had that anyway, so why would I be pining away? But I want to be healthy and I want to be happy. So what do you tell people that is there a one thing that they can do for optimal health? Because for me, it's about good health. I want to live another 50 years because I have to help preserve the planet. And I want to make sure it's in better shape. So what do you tell people that is a one or two thing, a one or a twofer that they can take away and say, okay, I can do that?
Well, the one thing, one silly point that I always make to people is, look, no one has died from a wimpy bicep. And no one has died of a tight hamstring yet.
That's really good. Or plantar fasciitis.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, the biggest, most important thing is that people get out there and do something that at least, you know, hopefully they enjoy it. And if they don't love it, hopefully they're doing it for some other good reason. You know, like people who don't necessarily love walking, but they're doing it for the Avon Women's Walk.
Right, right.
You know, the biggest thing is just honestly to move. I read something very interesting lately, and what they talked about is exercise and low back pain. And here is the interesting thing that they were saying. They were saying, look, we haven't been able to prove that any one exercise program causes a decrease in low back pain, but we have very good evidence that any exercise decreases low back pain.
I am a walking billboard for exactly that. For exactly that. If I walk, it doesn't hurt. If I sit at my computer 10 hours a day, my lower back hurts. That's all. It's that simple.
So, yeah, and it's not about you doing oodles and oodles of core exercises and all sorts of crunches. It's just
moving,
have to move.
Moving.
Yeah.
But as whatever his name would say, bam, just move. I know, the cooking guy. I love him. I can't believe I can't remember his name.
Emerald
says, bam, so just move. And when I do that, as soon as I start hurting, that's what I do. So it's. I really hope that the next time you're on the show, you say, so Mrs. Green, how's that doing just one thing working for you? Because I am publicly available for the answer. Now, what about, there's people that say, and I think I have been one of them, and some of my friends say it, I don't have time. And to me, everybody has the same amount of time because we all live in 24-hour-a-day segments. We tend to put ourselves last,
yes,
typically. So what do you say to clients that come in, and I'm sure they say it time after time, I just can't find the time. I just don't have the time. What's your advice before we eat our time up on your segment?
My big advice to people is to stop making exercise into something that has to look a certain way and something that you have to dress a certain way for.
Okay.
You know, whether
That's
you're
a
in
good
a pair
one.
Of Lululemons or whether you're in a pair of khakis and a dress shirt, you know, a 10-minute walk through the neighborhood after dinner you know, to aid in digestion and make you feel a little bit better. It's the same exercise.
And everybody can do that. Give up 10 minutes of TV. I'm giving up TV for a long time. I really am. I read three books this past week, and I thought, I love reading. What am I doing turning on the television? That does very little but upset me. So just do it is really simply what you're saying. Move, 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 move. Find the time. Make yourself a priority.
And start thinking about that. You know, and once you've made movement something that becomes nourishing as it is to yourself, where you're in the position where you realize, look, if I don't move, I hurt. It's at that point when you've made it a habit that you can start getting a little bit more detail oriented, and you can start saying to yourself, look, I'm going to make a goal of trying to move 90 minutes this week.
I love it. I love it. I love iHeart Miraval. I love Andrew Wolf, exercise physiologist from Miraval. Check them out on Facebook and Twitter. Stay healthy. And Andrew, thank you so much. I can't wait to see you in person. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Mr.
Thanks
Grace.
For spreading good, healthy news.
In the mid-to-sun summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook, and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
The Fairfax Companies is Tucson's green waste disposal solution. Contractors, landscapers, or do-it-yourselfers, come see us. We recycle almost all types of construction and landscape waste. Eastside Speedway and Prudence, Northwest I-9-I-10, Southeast Drexel and Houghton. The Fairfax Companies is the leader in the business of sustainability. We're open to the public and cost less than other landfills. Call 290-9313, 290-9313, or visit us online at thefairfaxcompanies.com.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green. Do you know that you can save up to $258 a year on fuel costs when you drive a VW 2011 Jetta TDI clean diesel from Chapman? And you can travel up to 609 miles per tank and reduce those ugly, sooty emissions by 90%. And remember, Chapman doesn't just sell cars. They provide you with the best ownership experience possible. Visit them at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan and tell them Mrs. Green sent you.
You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives?
Well, it's true.
It's true.
Well, it's true.
Goodwill.
Goodwill gave my son a chance.
My mom, hope.
My brother, a sense of purpose.
And help my dad find a job.
Goodwill helps thousands of people.
People like us every year.
People like us.
Every year.
Your donations to Goodwill do change lives. Please donate today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. We're so happy about this new year, excited. Have a wonderful guest planned. Just had a wonderful guest, Andrew Wolf, who's an exercise physiologist from Miraval, with some wonderful message that we should all take to heart. And we are so excited about having Allison Cook, the director of special projects from The Story of Stuff. This has been a longtime goal of Mrs. Green to get someone from their organization on. And we want you to remember tomorrow is a very special day to be mindful of the tragic events of a year ago. So do whatever whatever it is you do to honor all of the people whose lives were impacted forever on that truly fateful day. None of us here in Tucson will ever forget it, and we can make something really, really go beyond what happened, and I think that's what the world, the United States, and definitely Tucson has done. So, Allison, thank you so much for being with us and sharing about this story of stuff. I'm borderline giddy.
Oh, well, thank you. It's so nice to be on. I really appreciate it.
Well, we're spreading the good green word, and I think I've watched the Story of Stuff video maybe, I don't know, 10 times. I don't think it's an under-exaggeration or over-exaggeration, because I just feel as though that was one of the shift in consciousness for me in my journey as Mrs. Green, and a major impetus for starting this show, because there was too much stuff. There was no more way. So let's start with, I always like to start in the beginning. How did it all begin, and how did you guys decide this was a movement that you were going to get behind, and look what's happened and continues to happen?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, I love hearing stories like that about people who have watched the Story of Stuff and have had it, you know, turn a light on for them. And for those of you who haven't watched the Story of Stuff, it's available for free online at storyofstuff.org, as are all of our other movies. But the Story of Stuff is actually born out of kind of Annie's brain and creativity. Annie is the woman who narrates the movie. It's
right.
A short 20-minute animated movie about where our stuff comes from and where it goes when we're done with it, and the environmental and social impacts along the way. And Annie had literally spent about 20 years trotting the globe and looking at where our waste ends up and where our things are made. The movie itself was kind of born out of her desire to get people on board and to kind of share her experience and what she had learned from all of her experiences traveling abroad. She worked with Greenpeace for, you know, almost 15 years doing that work. And so she initially started by giving a talk. You know, it was just kind of a very basic The Story of Stuff talk. So
right, share what I've learned. Yes.
Exactly.
Right.
And she actually used to do the drawings by hand herself and kind of stick them up on the board. And people kept coming up to her and saying, oh, you should turn that into a movie. And so a little over 4 years ago, Annie partnered up with the great folks at Free Range Studios, and they condensed that hour-long talk into the 20 minutes that it is now, and created the Story of Stuff as we know it. And
I think
it.
There's something like over 15 million views or some
it's
really
true.
Significant number like that.
It still blows my mind.
It does.
It's been, over
that's a big number.
Million times. It is one of the more successful environmentally themed online movies that's ever been made, and we just feel so grateful for the incredible response.
It's not the most. Yeah, I don't know anything that holds a candle to it, but I say that from my heart. And for people that haven't seen it, could you just paint a little bit of a picture on the radio? I can't wait till I'm on radio and TV so we could have a visual running.
Of course.
But the materials economy, that is one of the things where it's a huge aha moment when she talks about, you know, it's always explained in the linear way, but there's a finite system and the two don't match. Would you just share with our listeners a little bit about that concept?
Of course. So Annie kind of runs through, and in all of our work at the Story of Stuff, we talk a lot about the materials throughput or the materials economy. And so that is, it kind of consists of five stages. So that's extraction, production, distribution, consumption, and disposal.
Right.
And so what Annie does in the movies and in all of our kind of materials is we walk through all of those different stages of the materials economy, that kind of all of the things, all of the stuff in our lives goes through that process. We, you know, mine the metals, we make the things in factories, we ship them around the globe, we, you know, play with them in our houses, and then when they're not good anymore, when they break, as things all too often do, then we chuck them in the trash.
You know,
and so...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's kind of like even when you're talking, it's when you see, like, you're in a stadium or even with, I don't know, that's the best analogy, where you see sections of lights going on.
Yeah.
When I listen again to the story of stuff, another section of light bulbs go on, and I can give you perfect examples of it. So, yes, I understand that piece. So it's just not... There's not cradle to cradle in our society. There's just cradle to grave, and the graves are full. That's a terrible metaphor.
Yeah,
but
we are literally running out of
space. Yep,
we are running out of space. It's incredible. In just the last 3 decades, 1/3 of the planet's natural resources have been consumed.
And talk a little bit about that, because it really is important for people to hear it. The rainforest, the fisheries, the extraction of natural resources from the ground, 1/3. It's like, okay, I do this once in a while, and I hope it doesn't sound obnoxious, but like, hello, are you awake? Is everybody listening? 1/3.
Well, part of what's so challenging is that is all hidden from view. And we don't really see the environmental and social impacts of the way that we make, use, and throw away stuff. So it's really not about feeling guilty.
Absolutely.
It's about
not.
You know, taking action, because literally our survival emotionally and physically depends on it. And that we are just using too much stuff here in the United States, and that, you know, our relationship to stuff has just become totally dysfunctional.
We're the leaders of stuff consumption. What a badge of honor.
Yeah.
Not.
Exactly. You know, we're also the leaders in, you know, childhood obesity and things like that, too. So there, we've definitely got to rethink a lot of our relationships to the things in our lives.
And I think an important part that you also bring, which it is a perfect segue. So there is the production. And mm-hmm. we are dysfunctional. So we don't think that if there is another coal-fired power plant being built in China, that it has any effect on us whatsoever. And I want to bring it around to, you can bring it around, I know, about how it does impact me sitting here in Tucson, Arizona, but then talking about research, rock-solid research, about how that coal-powered particulate might be showing up in something as simple as breast milk, and there's scientific evidence. So talk about production and how it does impact our health, because I think most people really want to be healthy. They don't want to be sick.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is even, you know, even as we're continuing to ship most of our production offshore, even here in the U.S., the industry in general admits to releasing over 4 billion pounds of toxic chemicals a year.
Ouch.
And that's just what
they admit.
That's
really a big number.
And that's just what they admit to. So that could be a much larger number. And the challenge is, you know, kind of like you and I were chatting about before, we see this as, oh, we just throw it away and, you know, oh, they just dispose of it and no big deal. But the real challenge is that there is no away, particularly when you're dealing with air pollution, water pollution, those kinds of things. There, you know, you can't section off air or water very effectively. We've tried. And so those, you know, the coal-fired power plants that we're building in China, that air is going to blow somewhere. And oftentimes it will end up here in the United States.
And we found that out with the tsunami. I mean, there were measured particulates. It was not a danger, but we saw how many days and exactly how long it took for things to go all the way around the world from Japan to California. It was not a high-risk danger, but scientists measured it. It wasn't, you know, the bad news. It was just the facts.
Well, and it's just common sense on some level.
There are no air boundaries.
You know, the thing that we're continuing to learn again and again is, oh, yeah, we only have one planet. We may be living like we have 3 to 5, but there's only this one planet Earth, and so we've really got to, you know, adjust the way that we, you know, make and use energy, the way that we make and use stuff, so that we can all live here in a happy, healthy way. And that's really part of what we're trying to do here at The Story of Stuff, is turn the volume up on that conversation, because not only are we using more stuff and more toxic stuff than ever before, but it's not even making us happy.
And do you think, like, when you're going there, I mean, I take it all personally, and what is my life, and an evaluation, and I don't get sad about it for the most part. I see it as an ultimate responsibility, as a good steward of the community and of my planet, but I also see it as an exciting opportunity to make another change. So when you talk about stuff, has your experience been in working with the project that, like with me, it started with plastic and safe cosmetics, and it was not, it didn't start with Mrs. Green. That's how Mrs. Yeah. Green evolved. But is it people start somewhere? In the story of stuff, to me, there are so many opportunities and so many openings for someone to have a takeaway, to begin to live consciously, as I call it. And I want to pump up the volume. That's why I started a radio show.
Exactly. I mean, Annie and I sometimes joke, I mean, all of us here at the project do, that kind of one of the really great things about such an all-pervasive problem is that you don't even have to do something that you don't like to get involved.
Right.
That kind of all along the system, there are issues that desperately need to be addressed. And so whatever it is that turns you on and gets you excited is a great way to get involved. It's an all-hands-on-deck situation. So if healthy food is really what gets you going, go for it. If you really want to, you know, advance public transportation and safer ways to get around, make a bike lane, do it. If you want to, you know, look into plastic pollution and, you know, get really involved in that, if that's the particular thing that drives you, you know, crazy, then go for it. I mean, we are dealing with all sorts of issues in all sorts of ways. So whether it's education, consumption, you know, protecting your local forests or deserts, we need your help.
And here's what I think happens. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I was just going to say, I was going to make an extra plug that the great thing about kind of that work and the need for that work is that we, you know, there's an emerging science on happiness, which is suggesting that getting involved and participating in those ways not only, you know, helps save the planet and do all those great things and build the community, but it actually makes you happier.
I love it. I mean, it's, and I totally believe it. There's a part of you that when you're doing it right and you know it's right, that you feel a little bit noble. It should be, to me, a humble noble, because you should be doing the right thing anyway. But the more steps I take, I don't feel better than, I just feel better inside. It's like I feel so much better. And I was, what I was going to say when you were talking is, it's like, you know, there are gateway drugs. Well, these are gateway habits to more sustainable practices, because what happened with us is we started with something, and now it's become an integrated system in our lives as a family and as relatives and as really dear friends. There's the pebble in the pond effect, because the same old habits just don't feel as good. And I can tell you, like the last holiday season, the number of people that told me the changes they made because of the trash they produced, three huge bags of trash the year before, and we just hawked it like crazy. I don't need anything. I need no more stuff. Yeah. Now, my husband did get me a pair of Uggs for Christmas, and I was very happy. I admit that. But that's about, and a pair of pajamas from my kids. That was it. You know what I mean? But it's like such a difference from having 10 packages of what that we don't even remember.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's one of the real lessons that we're continuing to learn with the story of stuff, is that people are really ready and excited to hear this message.
I agree.
People know and understand that stuff isn't making them happy anymore. It just becomes another stress, another thing that you have to deal with and organize and sort and, you know, store and all of these kinds of things, or the credit card debt that you have to pay off. And for what? A lot of, you know, ecological crises and a messy home.
Yes, exactly right. Stuff, shoved in stuff. There's no clearing. I mean, and it does make me happier when we get rid of stuff. And those credit card offers that come 10 a week that I've been writing about on my Facebook page that I found an answer for, to how to stop them coming. That's mm-hmm. junk mail.
Yeah.
It's really upsetting. Now, how about in the United States? Is there, what I want to talk about, you know, we'll have a break like in 2 minutes, but a lot more time to talk about it. When you said you feel as though everybody's ready, I feel that too. And then I wonder, am I living now in a sustainable bubble where more people I'm, you know, hanging around with believe the same thing? Is the U.S., is there any measurable progress on consuming less? Because where does it go in 6 months? You know the answer to that. In 6 months, where's all the stuff we got?
Most of it's ending up in a landfill.
Yes.
is the reality. But I would say that one of the real exciting things about working here is that we are in conversation with an incredibly diverse community of people who, from all over the world, from all walks of life, who are saying, yes, I knew that, I just didn't know how to say it, or, you know, I never even thought about that, but that really makes sense to me. You know, and people are really trying to live their lives differently. And I think that, you know, one of the challenges that we face in the United States is that our economy, as it's designed, is dependent on consumption. So we've got to figure out some alternatives in terms of to, you know, have a happy, healthy, thriving economy and also take care of people and the planet.
I think that's really a huge point, because there has to be a lot more shifts. And what you're talking about to me is integration. And I think in Mrs. Green's world, I get frustrated when the solar people aren't talking to the cosmetics people, who aren't talking to the food people. So we're going to take a quick break. It's an exciting show. The time is flying. We're talking with Allison Cook, the director of special projects, Story of Stuff. Please stay here with me. We will be right back.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green. Do you know that you can save up to $258 a year on fuel costs when you drive a VW 2011 Jetta TDI clean diesel from Chapman? And you can travel up to 609 miles per tank and reduce those ugly, sooty emissions by 90%. And remember, Chapman doesn't just sell cars. They provide you with the best ownership experience possible. Visit them at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan, and tell them Mrs. Green sent you.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to clean up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, and again at greenlivingaz.com.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road, too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Happy New Year. Remember that we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And to me, that's a solution to it all. Just think. You will live consciously. You will be so happy. As our guest on air right now, Allison Cook, who's the director of special projects from the Story of Stuff, said there is research to prove that doing things right and living more consciously makes you happier. So there is no downside to that. Allison, thank you so much for being with us, and let's get rolling. There's lots more to cover.
All right. Well, what do you want to talk about next?
I think this is a big one, because I'm kind of a schizophrenic when it comes to the role of government versus the private sector and corporations. I'm a personality that I don't want people to tell me what to do. And yet, I feel at times there are very appropriate roles for the government to step in, because either the private sector is not aware of it, or they're not moving, or there's always the wonderful, ever-present greed. Everything's about earnings per share, yeah, and companies don't care. I grew up in New Jersey, and I remember literally we could have walked across the Hudson River with our, just walk across it because of the trash, and the EPA got involved, and the polluters, they went upstream, they regulated them, and now the Hudson River is healthy again. There's fish. You can not be worried that if your kid drops in that they're going to, you know, die of some toxic waste. So what's, yeah, your stand from the story of stuff on our responsibility as a government and as corporations? Because they're both really, really, really big.
Yeah, and increasingly, you know, corporations are bigger than the government.
Yes.
And to, you know, learn a little bit more about that, I would suggest that people watch our movie, The Story of Citizens United versus FEC, which talks about the increasing role of corporate power and corporate money in politics.
Which I have not watched, I admit it.
Oh,
I
can't wait for you to see it. You're going to love it.
I absolutely will. It sounds like another show to me.
I would say, you know, it's one of those tricky questions, and I don't have an easy answer. But I will say that one of the things that doing this work has taught me is that there is only so much that you can do as an individual. There is a lot that you can do. You can, you know, bring your own bag to the grocery store. You can bike to work. You can, you know, eat organic. You can do all of these things to conserve energy. But at a certain point, you reach a limit. So, for example, if you want to recycle, but you live in a community where they don't have a recycling program, you would need to band together with your local government
to
make that happen.
Right.
And so there are these systemic issues that we don't have control over as individuals. And I feel like those are the areas where it's really important to have not only corporations who are going to do better in terms of, you know, I think B Corps are really an exciting example of corporations that are trying out different models. I think there's some really exciting social entrepreneurship, you know, enterprises, but
right, successful
but
ones, right?
Yeah, very successful ones. You can be green and make money, but I would say that there are some issues where we need more regulation. Your example of the, you know, Hudson Bay is very apt, you know, and I think, you know, one of the things that I think about particularly is personal care products, you know. So, for example, right now in the United States, baby shampoo contains known carcinogens.
Many, not just one, something like six.
it's
just
horrifying.
A little number. It's like, what? And I'm putting it on my baby's head?
On your baby's head. And so that, to me, it's just wrong. And
it's just
that
wrong.
To me is
That's
an example
exactly,
of where
it's just
we need
wrong and rotten.
It's just wrong. We need more regulation. We need to make sure that there is legislation passed saying that people cannot put these toxics into the things that we put all over our bodies and all over our families' bodies every day.
Slather them on, and you don't worry about no more tears, because if it was a natural ingredient, you wouldn't need a chemical to stop the tears, which is what they do with no more tears. It's not very good. Okay.
Like I said before, so much of this is just common sense.
Right, living consciously. Okay. And, but you talked about, to me, the consumer role, and I use the word sheeple. We don't have to be sheeple. I don't mean it in a derogatory way. Sometimes I'm part of the sheeple population, and I'm going to pick on a company because it's my show, and, you know, maybe they'll come after me, but Hershey's is a perfect example. I'm very much aware of the fair trade, and I know that Annie talks about it in the movie. We are one planet. You said that on the air. I can have an impact by telling my friends, don't buy Hershey's chocolate. And it can, as consumers, we can take back that power. Well, my granddaughter, when I was in Taos, asked me a question. She's really smart, and she's 11 years old, and we were talking about Chevron. And she said, Grandma, how can we impact Chevron? And I looked at her, and I said, you know what, Maddie? I don't know. I'm not sure how we can exactly make a major impact on something that big. So do you have an answer for that, Allison? It's like, I want to give my granddaughter hope all the time. And I said, and I told her about Hershey's. I said, don't buy Hershey's Kisses because they really don't care about fair trade. You turned a blind eye to it. But how can we make an impact? Because as consumers, we have so much untapped power that we're not using.
I would say that as consumers, we have so much untapped power. But are what is perhaps even more powerful is when we engage as citizens, when we engage as members of a community.
Right, right.
And that there is so much that we can do in terms of making, you know, conscious decisions about how we choose to spend our money. And perhaps what's even more exciting in the face of, you know, seemingly, you know, impossible to change companies like Chevron, when we engage as citizens in these larger systemic kind of actions,
right,
we have
right.
a lot more power.
Right.
And that we may not be able to shop Chevron into being a socially responsible company, but there are a lot of things that we can do as engaged members of our community and, you know, as engaged members of planet Earth to, you know, really get them into shape. And, you know, there are some really great campaigns being done by organizations like Oil Change International, Greenpeace, Rainforest Action Network, really whip Chevron into shape. And so I think some of what you're, you know, talking about, and I feel like some of the quandary that we face is trying to address kind of, we've been taught that we have so much power as consumers, and I think that sometimes we forget that we have a lot of power as citizens, as you know, members participating in a democracy.
We do see that, and it makes world news in the form of an overthrow of a government. But if we stop and think about it, the American consumer can change the world tomorrow. I mean, if we all woke up at the same time and the light bulb went off, it's like, okay, here we go, and it's going to be a great ride. And I love your pointing out something as simple as nobody really wants to put poison and carcinogens on their baby's head. They just don't know.
Yeah.
That commercial is so cute. Oh, look, no more tears. And you think, oh, dear Lord, this is toxic. That was the beginning of my journey, as I said, safe cosmetics and trash. Now, let's talk about a little bit, bring it back again to the United States. Does it help when people really consciously buy things that say made in the USA? That's one part. And do the U.S. manufacturers, this is, I don't want to put you on the spot so you don't have to answer it, do they make things to last or do they make things to break? Because
yeah.
I'm paranoid a little bit about, like, okay, this is supposed to last about 6 months.
Yeah.
It's designed that way.
I would say that there are a number, you know, there are a number of different ways to approach that issue. And I think that buying local, buying things that are made in the U.S. Can be a really great way to invest in our local communities and invest in our local economy. You know, and not only are we investing in that way, but we're also in all likelihood reducing the ecological stress of shipping things all the way around the planet. And the multiple ocean liner and train trips that things often take to get to us. So buying things local, buying things that are made in the U.S. can be a really effective way to participate in that important shift. That being said, overall in the way that we make things, there is an increasing shift towards what we talk about in the story of stuff as planned obsolescence, things that are literally designed for the dump, designed to break. And that there has been an increasing shift in the last 50 years where the things that we buy and use every day are no longer designed to last a lifetime.
On purpose. You know,
on purpose.
On purpose. It's like,
so that we have to buy more.
Exactly. And I mean, I love that part of the video of Annie's presentation because my husband and I so believe that. It's like, this is really a piece of garbage and it's not going to last. And there's an affordability factor that comes mm-hmm. into that for families. But it, to me, it's the one hope I can see is, I know one of my biggest rants, and I rant about a lot of things, are every time you get a new cell phone, it's a new phone charger for the car, it's a new phone charger for the house, and it's a new phone. Well, now they're mandating, this is where appropriate use of government clout comes in, that there is something called a universal charger. And that's what it should be, because where does all that stuff go? Most people don't recycle.
Yeah.
So that's a good example. Okay. So
that's a great example. I mean, cell phones and electronics in general are just such an egregious example of planned obsolescence. We made a movie, actually, specifically about that, called The Story of Electronics, which I would strongly suggest.
And I watched that a little bit. I watched a little bit of that, but I've got stuff to do since I'm not going to be watching TV for a while. It's really stuff that helps your mind and expand instead of, you know, turn it off in horror because it's more bad news.
It's true. But you know, I feel like the cell phone issue is critical because you know, an insane percentage of Americans and people worldwide have cell phones. And the fact that, you know, I just the other day forgot my cell phone charger at home. I have 3 cell phone chargers in the office, none of which fit my phone.
Isn't that awful? And you don't want to throw them away. I mean, you know, Allison would never throw them away. We have a place that we go to now. There are quite a few places in Tucson where you don't have to ship them. And they take them apart and they reuse the parts and they sell them to places in the United States and support social service programs. But I've got boxes around here still that we haven't cleaned out.
And so do most Americans.
Yes.
But if people are looking into recycling their electronics, I would always strongly recommend that people look for places that are e-steward certified. And that's how you can make sure that your electronics are being recycled without being shipped overseas.
I'm writing that down, e-stewards.
E-steward, yes.
I know that Project Rise that we work with is certified to that.
That's
and
great.
I'll put that up on my Facebook. So that's a good one. Now,
yeah,
we don't
want to make our cell phone use a toxic problem in another country.
No,
it's just
no. And
there.
I admit, I want an iPhone. I have friends that just look at me and they say, oh, you have a droid. Like, oh, you're growing something on your face that's really ugly. So I think I have to step into the iPhone world. Not that I want to be a commercial for them, but it's like, yeah, it's so easy. Now, at the end of Annie's, the video, she gives a lot of hope. And I think in the last, you know, 5 minutes or so that we have here, she talks about zero waste. She talks about the consciousness of a global economy, green chemistry, renewable energy, equity, closed loop production. What are some of your highlights of hope, as I call them? I always like to end the show on an up note because people want to know what they can do, what simple step they can start with. Just like when I was talking to Andrew from Miraval about exercise earlier on the show, don't start saying you're going to exercise an hour and a half a day and do a triathlon in 2 months. That is not going to work. So I'm 61 years old. I know that. So it's like, okay, 20 minutes, I can do it. So what is your kind of synthesize some of your thoughts as the special project director on things that we can look for and maybe a couple of calls to action?
Yeah, so this is one of the things that gets me the most excited about the work that we do here at The Story of Stuff is that there are so many solutions to these problems. There are so many ways to get involved. And in terms of, you know, kind of what you were saying before, is starting with something small, starting with, you know, the micro movement, so to speak, that it's really important for people to pick things that really light them up, things that get them excited. And so with the kind of this pervasive problem that we face, I would say that the things that get people most excited is exactly where they should start. For me, one of the things that is super exciting to me is as someone who is obsessed with trash and waste, is the increasing number of product designers who are thinking about how they can make things differently with less waste.
I agree. It is very encouraging.
It's
exciting.
Thrilling.
And easier to ship and not as much packaging and all that. Yes.
Yeah, well, almost 70% of a product's kind of waste that it's going to create is determined at the design stage.
Yes, and not when you recycle it. That people say, well, I recycle. And I say, you know, your plastic bottle, 97% of the energy is consumed before it goes into your hand.
Yeah.
So that's great, but try using a reusable bottle.
Yeah, and I would say that those are great things. You know, you know, if it's using a reusable cup or bringing a reusable bag or, riding your bike to work, those are great ways to start. And one of the things that, you know, I really like about those is that when I do those things, when I ride my bike to work, when I drink from my reusable bottle, I feel like I am living in alignment with my values.
I agree.
From that place, it's so much easier to take those bigger systemic actions. It's so much easier for me to fight the influence of corporate money in politics. It's so much easier for me to write a letter to Dow Chemicals. It's so much easier for me to sign a petition asking Chevron to do something different. because I don't feel like I'm being hypocritical, and I don't really feel like we need to nag each other into doing those things, because it's hard.
And it doesn't work. It just doesn't.
The system is not designed to make it easy for us to do the right thing. And
eating in a locally owned restaurant. I mean, if you're a business owner and you have a business, you want to eat in a locally owned restaurant. And believe it or not, Allison Cook, director of a special project at the Story of Stuff, we are in our last minute. I just want to give a shout out for next week, because remember the BP oil spill? We're going to have an update from the Gulf Monitoring Consortium. Guests from Sky Truth, South Wings, and Waterkeeper. Allison, thank you, and tell people your website in the last couple of seconds.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on. And anybody who's interested, please check us out at www.storyofstuff.org.
What a great way to start the new year. I feel very blessed, and blessings to everyone.
Tomorrow, let's remember all of the things that happen and what good can come out of it. Blessings, Happy New Year, Mrs. Green's World. We don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, so start thinking.